Greetings, and welcome to the fifth episode of the ETC Voices podcast. I am your host, KMO, and I'm podcasting from the Eco Village Training Center on the farm in Summertown, Tennessee. I am back from a two-week hiatus. I took a trip to Maryland to see my children, but now I am back. The regular print blog is running, as is the ETC Voices podcast. And in this episode, I will play a conversation that I recorded with Albert Bates. It was recorded in a golf cart, sitting just outside the inn here at the ETC. And Albert was talking about Rudolf Steiner. And in this installment of the ETC Voices podcast, you will be hearing about the difference between organic agriculture and biodynamic agriculture. Biodynamic agriculture, to my mind, is a strange beast indeed, but the world is a more colorful and interesting place because of it. The music that you hear in the background was sent in for use on the Sea Realm podcast by Mawaka. I hope the artist or artists don't mind my repurposing it for use here on the ETC Voices podcast. Well, without any further ado, here is my conversation with Albert Bates. Well, we're sitting here in a golf cart, and I'm here with Albert Bates, who, if I understand things correctly, is the founder of the Eco Village Training Center.
Yes, right? That's right.
And that happened in what year?
1994.
And we're on the fifth episode of the ETC Voices podcast, and this is your first appearance. Why is that?
I get out a bit, and I was traveling these last few weeks in different places. I have a schedule that tends to follow the seasons, and as I get older, I tend to like to be in warmer places in the winter months. And I had some misgivings about all that travel. You know, I teach permaculture courses, natural building courses, advise eco villages, and do other kinds of things to justify my travel. But I had some misgivings because I was talking with Rob Hopkins, who is the founder of the Transition Towns movement. And he has forsworn air travel and won't do it anymore. He thinks it's just a crime against the climate and the atmosphere and so forth. And I concur. But on the other hand, I also was speaking with Richard Heinberg, and Richard said, Albert, you know, we're not going to have all that much longer on air travel. And my advice to my kids and to anybody else is do it while you can. And so I kind of lean towards Richard. It's a guilty pleasure I take of being able to fly off to Brazil and study the Terra Preta soils, or teach permaculture in Ireland. But I'm doing it while I can, recognizing that it's going to be a whole lot longer going there by tall ship than it is right now by hopping a jet. And to atone for that, I plant trees. So I'm cautious and have been doing this ever since 1987, I think. I've always planted more trees each year than all my air miles and car miles combined and all my other carbon footprint. I've done the meticulous calculations, and I've always exceeded my carbon footprint in carbon sequestration. So I run a carbon neutral lifestyle, even though I am supporting an airline industry that's probably not.
In the very first episode of the Eco Village Training Center Voices podcast, or ETC Voices podcast, Cliff Davis, the gardener here, was talking about collecting microorganisms with a little bamboo contraption and some leavings from the kitchen and some molasses, which is done, by the way. He's dug that up, and I saw all the groovy things growing in it. And somebody asked him about Rudolf Steiner, and he wasn't quite ready for that question. Cliff has got a lot to say, although he's really just getting warmed up in terms of speaking to an audience. And I wonder what you would tell somebody who didn't know a thing about Rudolf Steiner and was interested in permaculture and related topics.
Yeah, Steiner's a tricky bit because he's very, occult, esoteric, cosmic. And he has this, I would say, 19th century theosophical lilt to his writings and speakings. And he was a philosopher who lived at the turn of the 20th century, and his probably most famous series of lectures as regards the agriculture of our time was a series that he gave when he was invited to what is now part of Poland, Silesia, to help some farmers who were struggling through a drought cycle and having a really hard time with their crops. And so he was a theosophist in the Madame Blavatsky genre, and he was asked to come talk to them about agriculture. And so he gave a series of lectures, which subsequently became a book called Agriculture by Rudolf Steiner. And it's an almost impenetrable book. I mean, I have to say, I consider Buckminster Fuller's books almost impenetrable, too. But there are gems of wisdom if you take the time to probe. And what Steiner did was he looked at it from the standpoint of cosmic forces influencing the soil. And he had recipes that were very specific on how to harness those cosmic forces. And his recipes involve crystals and cow horns and sheep horns filled with manure and buried in the light of the moon in manure piles and left over winter and then harvested and turned into teas by stirring 77 times in one direction and 77 times in another direction, and then sprayed onto the field in a fine mist. And, you know, you look at this and you say, well, this is geomancy. This is some kind of woo-woo, crazy occult stuff. It can't possibly have any relation to the real world. But in point of fact, this became the foundation of what we today call biodynamic farming. And it was extremely advanced for a number of reasons, probably very little of it having much to do with Steiner's philosophy, but because he just happened to latch on to the right combination of things that the soil community, the microbial community, actually loves and thrives on. And that is a nutrient-rich anaerobic condition which Steiner's formulas created. And what he did was he got the local microbes going, and this is where Cliff was talking the other time about effective microorganisms, or what he calls indigenous microorganisms, where you find in your immediate surroundings a vibrant source of microbial life, and you're looking for anaerobic bacteria, friendly nematodes, various microarthropods, and in good proportion. And you can find that in our case here in the bamboo groves, but in many places you can find it in a good rich forest soil. And you take that and you stir it into a tea, which at the right temperature and oxygenation allow it to rapidly multiply, so those bacteria are rapidly dividing and making more of themselves, and the bacterial food chain with the nematodes and the other primary decomposers are also multiplying. And then you take that tea and you add it to your garden, or you add it to your field or your forest, and you immediately are enhancing the microbial life of that area. Now, when you do that, you've stimulated the biological systems in the soil. It's different than when you're adding chemicals. When you're adding chemicals, you're actually trying to provide the basic nutrients to the soil, the phosphorus and the potassium and the nitrogen, which are the principal needs of growing plants. And I'm not against adding those kinds of things, but you have to recognize that that's a very simplified, mechanistic, Cartesian viewpoint, and it comes back to Justus Liebig and the others who were the Nobel Prize-winning inventors of fertilizer back in the 19th century. And their viewpoint of the world, which was reducing it to the minimum, what's the minimum that plants require, and give them that, and they will grow, and you'll get the Green Revolution, and you'll get swelling of world population to 6 billion, 9 billion, 12 billion, however many people the planet can take, from adding these basic elements. Well, that's a chemical or mechanistic way of looking at things. The way Steiner really started and got people going in this other area was biological. And there are others, of course, who've come along, Albert Howard in England, Lady Eve Balfour in England, J.I. Rodale in the United States, who launched the organic concept, the idea of the life of the soil, enhanced with amendments from horse manure, cow manure, pig manure, and composted ingredients from your kitchen and so forth. All of those kinds of things, building up the soil and building up the rich microbial community. That's the biological approach. And if you get the biology right, and you have your right amount of your microbes and your nematodes and your various other nitrogen fixing and other kinds of things going, well, you don't need the chemical fertilizers, because those biological microorganisms will provide all of that in abundance, and the plants will thrive. And so, in fact, when you go and look at biodynamic farms or biodynamic gardens, what you see is a sparkling, beautiful garden of relatively pest-free, beautiful leafed vegetables and growing things, and you pick up the soil, and it has lovely tilth to it, and it has worms, and it smells nice and even tastes good. And so you have to say, well, whatever Steiner was onto, it works. You know, you can talk about the spirits encaptured in crystalline form and the effect of the other planets on the Earth and so on, but in point of fact, what he got going here was it works. And the scientists who are studying these things today, and I think of Elaine Ingham, and I think of others in the soil science community who are, you know, dissecting what is the soil food web and how does it work. You know, people at Cornell University or Oregon State or anywhere where they've got, Auburn University, all these different places where they have really good soil colleges, they're coming around to this same viewpoint that, first off, the chemical reductionist law of the minimum people are coming up against resource limits and fossil fuel inputs into making anhydrous ammonia from which they can get the fertilizer. And Mr. Haber and Mr. Bosch coming up with a system that was the fuel for World War I, which was how do you get nitrogen out of the air? And the answer was you can use this Haber-Bosch process to make ammonium gas. And that draws nitrogen out of the air and out of fossil fuels, out of natural gas in particular. And so they were able to fix and create nitrogen in compounds, which then became fertilizer for plants. However, it also became nitrogen for use in TNT, or nitroglycerin, or many of the different kinds of high explosive compounds that are used today. And what's happened as a result of that is we've thrown out the nitrogen balance on the planet. We're using billions of gigatons of nitrogen that were never in the natural process that was created by bacteria and fungi and things for plants on this planet, and now they're being put into the atmosphere from car bombs in Iraq and from lots of other things. And well, Haber and Bosch both got Nobel Prizes for that, and we got the chemical fertilizer. And chemical fertilizer is now a dependency, just like fossil fuels is. People are addicted to chemical fertilizer all over the world. You could say that our population size is, to a large extent, dependent on that that fertilizer. And without it, we would be in a lot worse. We'd be in pretty bad shape pretty quickly. And that's a worry. That's a concern. And also is a concern, and this goes back to Aldous Huxley in 1924. Go back to Brave New World, and you'll see Aldous Huxley talking about the limits of phosphorus and potassium, and having to recover from dead bodies the basic elements that need to go back into the soil to be producing food, and that actually is pretty critical. And if you ignore it, you run into, you're just running off all of those essential elements into the oceans. You're making deep ocean sediments of those things, but you can't then use them. They've been dispersed. And the concentrated forms of those are very limited, and they're coming from very few places in the world right now, most of them in areas that are difficult from a geopolitical standpoint, volatile, have to be defended, and so forth. And so when you're into chemical fertilizer, you're not considering all of those externalities. And so when you talked about Rudolf Steiner, or when you talk about biodynamics or organics and Rodale, you're beginning to look at what's the next stage of agriculture. What's the post-petroleum agriculture of the future? Or if you think that peak oil is going to create a huge and rapid collapse of civilization, how are we going to provide food for ourselves and our families without the availability of chemical fertilizers? And you have to begin to learn these techniques that Steiner taught the farmers in Silesia back in the early part of the 20th century. And they may not be exactly, you know, these cosmic forces that he talks about, but they're essentially the same technique, which is building a healthy soil food web, giving it the nurturing care that it needs, taking care of it. And then what you find is that once you've established that, it's actually more resistant and resilient to climate change, droughts, heavy extreme weather events, deeper winters and so forth, than would be a chemically nourished soil. And so your plants and your crops are more likely to survive and provide for you in these kinds of times we're coming to now of extreme weather.
In a world with the whole catalog filled with books by Rodale Press and with books by John Jevons and Mel Bartholomew, why would anybody turn to Rudolf Steiner with all the additional sort of mystical baggage that comes with his system?
I think you have to have a kind of a scholarly interest to turn to Steiner, because you don't need to. You can just go to Mel Bartholomew, that'll get you what you need. But, on the other hand, Steiner does provide a tribe, okay? There are people who have been into Steiner who have a holistic worldview that is lacking in many of the mechanistic cultures that have evolved in the last century. And by getting into Steiner, and not just biodynamics, not just his agriculture, but his methodology for child rearing, his ideas about taking care of the developmentally challenged and those who are least able to care for themselves, the handicapped, and so forth, his social ideas, eurythmics, dance as a way of maintaining physical body strength and health, biodynamic architecture, which is his ideas about not putting corners in too many rooms and buildings, and having windows on three sides, and being able to have your interrelationships between buildings as a conviviality space, and passages that feel more like they're in tune with your DNA cravings for the cave, and those sorts of things. And the use of light and stained glass and so forth. All of that kind of stuff comes from Steiner, and it's totally brilliant. And it does revive a sense of the profound in architecture that brings you into a great sense of community and well-being, which if you go to visit, a Camp Hill community or a biodynamic farm, which is strongly influenced by Steiner, you can experience all of that and get the sense of wow that Steiner leaves us.
There are a great many people interested in astrology today. It seems to me that an interest in astrology could serve as a bridge to an interest in biodynamic agriculture in this whole holistic system that Rudolf Steiner has laid out. Well, Albert, I'm pretty sure that's all the time we have for this installment. The ETC Voices podcast goes much quicker than the Sea Realm, but I'm sure you'll be back, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Camo.
That was Albert Bates. Albert is the founder of the EcoVillage Training Center here on the farm, and he is somebody that you will be hearing from again in the future, no doubt. Well, rather than put together an elaborate show this time around, I'm going to leave off there and just say that if you think that you might be interested in visiting the farm, or more specifically, visiting the EcoVillage Training Center, participating in one of our internships or other programs, or in just staying here at the inn, then go ahead and send me an email. It's kmo@crealm.com, and that is the letter C, like consciousness, and then a hyphen, and then realm.com. And I will put you in touch with somebody who can give you the various options for staying here at the inn. I hope that you will take advantage of that, and I hope that you'll join me for another installment of the ETC Voices podcast. And until that time, have a great life.